Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Rebel Room. Ryan Green, Ron Kantowski, Rob Misch. We're going to three-way this thing, talk about UNLV, Utah.
Big victory over Utah tonight. Monumental victory for UNLV over Utah. What's that?
Clarify. I'm going to let you clarify.
Let's let Ron clarify.
Lady Rabs. Two words, Lady Rabs.
While that went down at the Cox Pavilion, it was a different story up in Salt Lake City underneath the steel cloud at the Huntsman Center.
I think I could hear Elaine Elliott complaining about the referees from here. I know this woman hoops stuff, but Elaine Elliott, pull that one out.
Long-time
coach at
Utah.
Already
over my head.
Done a real good job there.
I'd never heard the name until I saw her banner up in the concourse.
Right, next to the Bratwurst stand or the pizza that we couldn't get because Rick Majerus is here ahead of us.
No pizza for you.
Anyway, 70-60, Utah tops UNLV, knocks UNLV out of contention for the Mountain West regular season title that the hopes that had been hanging on by a thread. But,
not a surprise.
Exactly. Utah improves to 11-2. They are in pretty firm control right now, as they were for much of the night tonight in Salt Lake City. Let's just jump right in because... Boy, UNLV did not look comfortable early. They did not look comfortable in the middle. They did not look comfortable late. And Ron, you kind of said it best. When UNLV closed it down to 4 points at 57-53 with about 3:40 left to play, you said even this is not a game they really deserve to win. And that, you really couldn't have said it better than that.
No, they got down to a 2, and I said, how the heck did they do this? You look at the stats, there's nothing there that really jumps out at you. I think the only thing they did better than Utah tonight was they took care of the ball pretty well, I think, what they had. There were single turnovers in Utah, 20.
That was a season-high 20 turnovers for Utah.
But it looked like almost like the Utes kind of lost interest there for a while, and it almost bit them on the rear end because they didn't look like they were sharp. You know, they got the big lead, and like a lot of teams do, they cruised a little bit. And, you know, got to give the Rebels credit for at least, you know, hanging in there and making it interesting at the end. So,
I guess we can talk about capitalizing on turnovers because when it was 57-53, UNLV had 3 consecutive possessions where they had opportunities to chip in even closer and really couldn't. And, you know, Jim Boylan even alluded to it after the game. He talked about his team kind of fighting through some bumps there and a lull there in the second half. He said, you know, this is a group of kids that's not used to playing a meaningful game in February. So, you know, this is something completely new for them.
Yeah, it's really weird. They did that video afterwards, and it's really a proud program. It's their 500th win at Huntsman Center, and they went down the line with all the great coaches they've had, and a couple not-so-great ones recently. And you forget that until he came around, they can see the light that they're back a little bit now. But even the starting this year, there was a lot of skepticism with these guys. So, you know, it was a good crowd tonight. It's good to see this is one of the marquee programs, or has been for a long time. It's kind of good to see them back in a way. You know, they beat the Rebels. But it's no disgrace losing to a good team by 10 points at home. I mean, it happened to these guys a month ago in Las Vegas. So,
exactly.
You know, so.
It was actually 57-50.
57-50.
When UNLV failed to capitalize on 3 consecutive possessions.
And then they had the Rougeau and one.
But then the flip side, Utah failed to capitalize, too, to try to get back into it. Then you have the Rougeau 3-point conversion, and then you have Neville goaltending on Rougeau to get him back into it. It was almost as if the steam ended there.
Yeah, it's like they got right up to the top of the mountain, but Everest. It was like climbing Everest tonight, you know. And it's just
a little slippery.
A little bit too. Yeah, it's got that thin air, and they started huffing and puffing, and they didn't get a hand up in Dirk's face. One shot. It was like. It took them like 40 trips down the court to get back into it, and then 2 trips down the court they were out of it that fast. You know,
it wasn't. I don't know about Everest, but it was almost like the little hiker guy in The Price is Right. Do dee do dee do, and then it just ended.
Yeah, they needed the Saint Bernard there. Ended that first half. They needed the Saint Bernard with a full cask because it got ugly at the end of
really
the first half. Boy, you know, what was it? Like, I think it was like 20-20, and then it.
22-22, and then an 18-4 run to close it out.
Utah scored 18 of the final 22 points of the first half. We saw some ugliness there. I understand that folks watching this game at home on television with about 56 seconds to go, we saw a little tussle under the Utah rim. Rene Rougeau barking at Trayvon Willis, barking at Rene Rougeau. Wink Adams was right there. It was a little trifecta of them right there, and they all seemed to be pretty upset. It carried over to the free throw line. Rene barking at Willis, Adams casting an eye at Rougeau. A lot of them said that it was more than it looked, or it was less. It wasn't that big a deal. It was basketball. You have differences of opinion. Kendall Wallace said that it's a good thing that happened. You know, Rene's barking. Rene is being a leader. He's being vocal, and maybe it looks bad. Maybe people took it wrong. But Rene basically said, you know, hey, if it's constructive, if it's positive, that's fine. That's the way it should be. But that instance, it didn't exactly look positive.
No, and we kind of saw it on the closed circuit up on the video board, too, for a moment. And you kind of asked those guys what that was all about. What did they, you know, have to say? What did Rene have to say?
That was, you know, Rene said they acknowledged that that there was some issues. It basically had to do with Wink admitted that he and Trey called Rene out, so to speak, on some of his shot selections. Why settle for jumpers? Take the big guy down. Take Luke Neville. You know, take it at him. Be hard. Be strong. And, of course, we saw him do that.
And get swatted a couple times.
In the second half. Yeah. He was effective. You know, he did get the goaltending, you know. But issues within the team are now starting to come up sort of publicly. So, you know, this stuff has been latent, and now we're seeing it. Now we're hearing it. Rougeau took a season-high 17 shots tonight. A lot of, you know, other guys weren't hitting, so it was up to him to do it. And he almost scored 20 points for the first time as a Rebel, but he again finished a point shy. And, you know, he also talked about needing to put in more work, needing to get the job done better, because we saw a handful of shots hit the rim and not fall through the net. You know, they rolled off, and it just wasn't there. And that's what he's been doing in practice the past 2 days. It's incredible how many bankers and how many layups rolled off, hit the rim, rolled off, and that typifies his last few days.
And you know, it's I guess we can argue the other side of it too, is that, you know, while guys were barking at him about his shot selection, maybe. I mean, you know, I remember a few times in that second half when he was taking it down on Neville and the other four guys were just standing around the perimeter just watching instead of going down trying to help. You know, and that takes up an issue where Luke Neville, you know, why UNLV was so successful against Utah and coming back at the MAC, they pulled him out of the paint and they just attacked the rim. Tonight, you know, it was almost as like there was a tether, you know, bolted into the baseline attached at Neville's hip because he did not leave the paint. And nobody really outside of Rougeau really looked to want to try to take it at him. And it really threw UNLV's offensive rhythm for a loop. They couldn't find a rhythm for a long time. And,
that was the twist they did, because remember last game they would pull screen Darger on Neville, and then Neville was caught in no man's land. Does he stay on Rougeau? Does he go on Darger? Well, I better go on Darger. Well, that split second of indecision allowed Darger some space to get open on the three-point line, and then they kind of played with Neville at will. So they switched the like you said, and like you talked to him about, they switched the strategy to keep Neville closer to the rim and then rotate
the guards around. And the shots,
yeah. So it worked pretty well. What did they say about that?
They talked about, well, Neville, you know, kind of credited. He said without the guards rotating so well on the shooters, you know, it wouldn't have worked so well. And he said, you know, they beat teams with three-point attempts. And, you know, they only had 13 three-point attempts, which is the fewest since the last time they played Utah.
Yeah, I thought they really game-planned well. What they do so well is, I thought the Rebels, Neville had a big game stat. He had a big game any way you look at it. Stat-wise, I was 19 and 13 rebounds.
Yeah.
But there was a time there that the Rebels made an adjustment. They started sending two guys at him. They double-teamed him a little bit, poked the ball away. Got him off his little comfort zone there, made him take some shots that aren't really in his comfort range. Mm-hmm. But then they were smart enough to say, okay, they're collapsing a little bit too much, too strong here. And they had just guys on their spots, and they've got like four or five guys that can knock down those threes.
They can knock down threes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they were, but it was something like 60% on threes. It was, and so you got to give them a credit for you know, making that little small on the fly adjustment. I was really impressed with the way they played tonight.
And Rob, before the game, you mentioned Lawrence Bora, who came into the game red hot from 3-point range. He hit the first bucket of the game from long range. He goes, he winds up going 2 of 5 from deep, but hit two big ones in the first half. Sean Green hit 3 in the first half, and 2 really in the midst of that 18-4 run.
But we can't say enough about Bora. He's really a a kind of an unknown, maybe under the radar hero for this team. Neville scored double figures in points for the 10th consecutive game tonight. There's a guy who's done that longer, and that's Borja. This was his 12th game in a row with double digits. So, and it was real funny because after the game, I stopped Jim Boylan on the court. He was walking away, and we were just making small talk about the game. And I sort of mentioned how Wink has been struggling all season shooting. And tonight he went 3-for-12 from the field. And Boylan kind of shook his head at me, and he kind of raised an eyebrow, and he said, Borja's a good defender now.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing. I think fans and some sports writers, too, I think we all do this. You look at a stat sheet, and you say, this guy shot 3-for-12. He shot the ball awful. Well,
he didn't have a lot of clean looks.
Maybe the other guy that was guarding him had something to do with it, mm-hmm. you know. And I always think you look at it from your team's standpoint, like either and conversely, you say this guy made 9 out of 12. He shot well while nobody was guarding him, you mm-hmm. know. So he should shoot the ball well. So there's more to it. That's why I think sometimes you actually have to watch the game and look at these little individual matchups. Speaking of matchups, we were talking tonight earlier about the history of the Huntsman Center. 75 NCAA tournament games. Some great matchups. One of the greatest of all time, Bird versus Magic in 79. In the second half, we had Rutledge versus Neville. Not exactly a classic matchup, but nonetheless, it happened. And I think that showed that, hey, you know, Lam was doing some serious Krugerology there in the second half, trying to shake things up. And, just looks so funny, but you got to give Mo credit. He hung in there. It was 3 or 4 times on the court. He wound up on the big boy.
And he had that lineup out there that you pointed out with Deshaun Mitchell. The only starter on the floor at that point was Oscar Belfield. And he had Deshaun Mitchell, Rutledge, Kendall Wallace, and I can't even remember who the fifth was at that point. But
that's when you were taking your warm-up jacket off, trying to run down. We were too far up. You were trying to get buzzed in at that point, right?
Open gym.
Yeah. I was stretching out the old calves, you know, at that point.
Yeah, that was a lineup that you probably won't see too often during the Mountain West Conference tournament. No. Maybe against Air Force, if things go well.
If they wind up playing Air Force by some stroke of God.
I'm talking about next Wednesday.
Oh, next Wednesday. Okay, yeah.
I say Ketchum scores. Next Wednesday, his first bucket at home.
Is Lon Kruger one of those coaches who will start the seniors on senior night, where he'll start them all, and then, you know, like Ketchum will come out after 3 minutes or so?
Because we probably will see that.
Being Air Force, and you know they're winless this year. They're really down. Is that an example of where he starts all 5 seniors? Probably?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think one thing maybe we can talk about a little bit is that. You know, the Rebels are like in fifth place now, and they're, you know, it's kind of a downer. They were picked to win the conference. They're not in it. But they've really got a shot to make something of the season.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, and it all comes down to, like, it's the old battle cry. You know,
three games
in 3 days in March, however you want to put it. And just like I said earlier, I mean, they lost by 10 tonight, but they beat these guys. And this is a good Utah team. They beat them by 10 at home just less than a month ago.
And even the Utah guys yesterday, talking to him on the phone, said – you know, talked about what the atmosphere there did to them. They said basically it compounded the fact that UNLV was making this run and the fact that it was in a gym with 15,000 screaming fans against them. Yeah. It didn't help. So, I mean, I would imagine that goes the same for a lot of teams.
Yeah, you can look at it. Let's see, the Rebels lost by 10 here. Utes lost 10 of them in Las Vegas. Maybe if they played in St. George, it would be a double overtime game. I mean,
one of the better games you'd see all year.
How do you think this Utah team? Obviously, they're going to be a tournament team, an NCAA tournament team. How do you think they're going to do?
Are you saying they should move the Mountain West tournament to St. George, Utah?
Nah, they should move it back to Denver.
just waiting for
it. I think it might do better in St. George than it did in Denver. But that's just me. So
I think so. I think Mountain West schools coming away from Denver with about $13,000 will make them think thrice about putting it anywhere else in the future. I don't care how long they meet for and how long they talk for and how much they waste time and energy just to appease Steve Alford. I think that's a joke. But
you know, we were talking and we kicked this one around in the car on the way back to the hotel, but you know, if the Rebels come from like a fifth seed or something and win this thing, they're even going to start squawking louder.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're going to move it, you know, because they'll kowtow to the guy in the red jacket and whoever else is complaining and they'll move it, and then 3 years from 3 years later.
It'll be back in Vegas.
I think what they'll probably do, this is my guess, that there'll be some sort of compromise. Like, we'll put it in Vegas every third year.
Have a rotating tournament.
Have some sort of rotating basis. And, you know, maybe use San Diego. Maybe, you know, I know Albuquerque's going for it. Yeah. And, you know, that'll probably be something everybody can live with. And it'll make money 2 out of 3 years, and the third year it won't.
I don't think a rotating basis is the worst idea. I mean, obviously, if you're looking to just quiet up the, you know, the squeaking wheels. But, I mean, let's be real. Financially, it makes sense for everybody in Vegas.
And that's the real part is something that people, you know, this is about making money, these postseason tournaments. And the Mountain West is not. They found this out when they went to Denver. There's some schools that are close by, but Denver is a pro town. If anything, it's a Big 12 town with Colorado being nearby. Mm-hmm. And the Mountain West just doesn't have that cachet that the Pac-10 has, that the Southeast Conference have, where you could have it at some huge neutral site and everybody's going to show up, you know. It's just the way it is. And it's not a bad thing necessarily, but, you know, here we in the Mountain West, you know, the fans are all spread out all over the place. It's a big geographical region. You don't have that intensity, interest level, in the population level, like you do in the Big Ten, where all the teams are close by, and the media and everything,
and all the alums are spread out.
You know, so I don't, you know, that doesn't make the Mountain West a rinky-dink conference because they can't draw at a neutral site. It's just, it has a lot to do with geography and some other factors.
But let's face it, too, it has Las Vegas in it, and there's only one city with that cachet in this country, and guess what? The Mountain West can count Las Vegas in its brethren, and that by no means is a bad thing. With the hotels available, the entertainment, you can be a fan of Colorado State. You can be a fan of TCU, and guess what? You get to spend a few days in Vegas, enjoy some weather, have some great food, see some great entertainment, maybe win a couple dollars at the Baccarat.
Well, here's one thing about when the tournament is in Las Vegas. Even on Saturday, Friday for sure, you see people with Colorado State green on, even though they've gotten beat 2 days before. They're still there on Friday, a lot of them, sometimes on Saturday. I remember in Denver, you know, okay, let's hit the Coors Brewery on the way out of town and we're gone. We're home. You know, you didn't see people wearing the different colors of the two teams. You didn't see people with the colors of the two championship teams there on
you
Saturday.
You saw a bunch of casual casual yokels.
Yeah. So that's, you know, you got to play to your strengths. And when this, one of the strengths of the conference is having Las Vegas as this hub destination city. Like,
so shut up and accept it.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, people don't understand either. I think people forget this or don't even know this, the fact that tickets are divvied up.
Right.
You know, it's not as if UNLV fans get 50% of the tickets. Right. And they never know where the choice tickets are going to be. They rotate every year. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they are really given any favoritism. You know, there's no UNLV logos on the court. They're not even allowed to practice on their own court. They're not allowed to use their own locker rooms.
Right.
So, you know, whether that means Colorado State loses in the first round or TCU or whomever and they end up selling their tickets to Rebel fans, well, you know, there's enough BYU fans around to snatch up those tickets.
Yeah, here's another thing. I got to think those people on the committee, the selection committee, they do their homework. They know they know where the tournament's played. They know if a team got to the finals and lost to a UNLV team in the finals, that's a big accomplishment. And they take that into consideration when they throw these bids out, you know. So I think, you know, this is a lot of people just that like to hear themselves talk and get their fans riled up a little bit. I'm not going to mention any names still, Steve Alford, but that's but that's what I think.
Homo, the BYU athletic director, but we won't name names.
We won't name names. Tom Homo, Steve Alford. But not naming names, I think that's, you know, hey, if it gets your fan base riled up, I guess it's okay. But, you know, when you really think about it, you know, you got to hold the tournament in a place where it's going to make financial dollars and cents,
which is more important now than ever in these economic times, because not every school is the cash cow that BYU is, and they don't have to worry about whether they take home 15 or 20,000 or 150,000 from a Mountain West tournament. Right. That's not going to affect their bottom line, but it damn well is going to affect everybody else's, and they need to understand that.
Ron, your original question you asked about Utah and the NCAA tournament. I think this is a lock right now as an NCAA tournament team. That's because they, I mean, barring a collapse, they're going to be in the top two or three in the Mountain West
race. RPI is like down in some RPI lists.
Yeah, they played a good non-conference schedule. They beat LSU and Gonzaga, who will both be in the NCAA tournament. They lost at Oklahoma in a what was a close game for a while. But you look at this team, you can't help but be impressed because they have size and the ability for multiple guys to shoot the three and a big man who can anchor the post. I mean, that's
and they have an electric guy in Carlin Brown, and they have guys who can shoot the three, and they're unselfish.
Here's the one thing I keep, but I've been wrong all season. I've liked this team from the start. I saw him early against Gonzaga. I saw him play LSU. I started liking him, but I said, at some point, and I thought maybe the Rebels could expose them a little bit by extending their defense. They don't have a true point guard.
No, they don't.
But Durka, you know, he used to be, like, to me, like more of a shooter, but he's not even looking for shots. He took like three shots tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's not the ball, you know, he's not a Marcus Haynes Jr. handling the ball or whatever, but he does a serviceable job, and it really hasn't hurt them yet. And maybe that's, they get into the tournament when they're going to go up against some guys, and maybe that bites them a little bit, but so far it hasn't. So I think that's their one maybe Achilles' heels. They don't have a true point guard. But
on the flip side, he's got that Eastern European toughness and game, so that's going to cause people problems.
Yeah, kind of unflappable.
And even that Tyler Koepke coming off the bench. How big was he in the second half? He was big in the first half against UNLV back at the MAC. But this kid came off. How many big time shots did we see him hit? With guys in his face. This is just a little 5'10", 5'11" guy who is driving to the basket and finishing.
I got to tell you, I watched the game when they beat BYU in overtime. I've never seen this in a college basketball game. Probably happens in Europe all the time, but Koepke made this unbelievable runner through the lane. It was a key thing, and Durka came up to him and gave him a kiss.
On what?
On his face. Oh. I was on a cheek.
Okay.
It went on a lips.
Thank you for the clarification.
That's Eastern European.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, that was a kiss that Bill Raftery would describe it, you know,
the
new
kiss.
Definition. Yeah, yeah. But
Higgins.
it was
two
just
to one with a kiss.
But it was kind of cool, actually. Just impulse reaction. But he just probably did what he did a million times in Serbia. You know, it was no big deal there. But it was the kiss of death, I guess, for the Cougars. But Koepke kind of, he's like Jimmer Fredette Jr. now almost. You know, and I like Fredette.
I do too.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys like him. I really like him.
Absolutely.
I think he's
going
to be a great player by the time he's through. You know, and Koepke's not quite up to that level. He's a little smaller version, but he does kind of some of those same things for Utah that Fredette does all the time for the Cougars.
So how did this team open the season by losing to Division II Southwest Baptist
and lose at Idaho State? And they've had some mysteries, but you know what? Is that forgotten by now? You think?
No matter, this just proves that no matter what Guy Lewis and Houston Cougars thought, you can't just roll the gym out there and beat somebody. Roll the ball out on the court and say, okay, it's gonna everything. You know, we've got the better players. We're gonna win. You know, you got to show up and play. You got to guard guys. You got to set screens. You got to make shots. You know. So
yeah.
Well, let's talk about while we're on the NCAA tournament topic. We mentioned the three games in March, 3 days in March. UNLV right now, has this inconsistency over the last month, has this killed their shot in an at large? If they can't come through, I know there's a few games left on the schedule, but has this put a huge dent in their at large hopes if they can't come through with 3 days in March?
Well, you would think so, but, you know, I'm not a bracketologist, never played one on TV, didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night or any other night for that matter.
So it's all speculation.
And they all say that they're still, you know, I've seen some guys have them at their last four in, some guys have them solid in, some guys have them as a number 8 seed, so maybe it hasn't hurt. Beating this team tonight would have put him in solid, I think, you know. But
it's the same old story, you know. They take a step and then they lose a step.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen the pattern all season. Mm-hmm. Slow starts. We saw some sloppy, stupid. I'm sorry. We saw some stupid things tonight. We saw some passes down into the low post from odd combinations.
Some passed up shots.
And general lethargy, awkward pull-up shots. And the one thing they stressed also in practice, especially yesterday, was patience. And we saw some impatient ball tonight. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that bodes well.
No.
But I'm telling you what, you guys were, you guys have all seen it, I'm going to tell you, but Saturday – the place was rocking. It was loud. I thought that the crowd was worth maybe, 10 points on Saturday. And it's going to be like that during the tournament. It's going to make a big difference. I think you're going to see two different teams. I think you're going to see, mm-hmm. A different UNLV team on their home floor during the tournament than you did tonight, than you did at Wyoming, than you did at TCU, than you did at Colorado State. Am I missing anybody?
Well, and I think
than you did at home against San Diego
State.
That's
the thing. I think with those other losses on the road, you mentioned the lethargy maybe can be stemmed from a just a dead atmosphere like it was at Colorado State or TCU or Wyoming, but this was not a dead atmosphere tonight. No. I mean, it wasn't completely electric at the start, but it wasn't dead.
No, but then we saw the game last year, God, I hate to play devil's advocate to myself, but remember the TCU game in the first round last year? That's the game you think, okay, the Rebels are at home, it's going to blow these guys
89-88.
Out.
89-88.
Unbelievable game, man. TCU is throwing in threes from all over the place. I remember that. So, God, who knows what's going to happen. Yeah.
I think the tournament will be crazy like that.
Yeah.
That take that game and maybe throw a lot of those games in. I think there's really going to be some surprises and some upheavals. I think it's going to be, but back up just a little bit on UOV. I think we saw a disturbing thing tonight with Wink Adams scoring only 9 points. So first time in a dozen games, he was back down to single digits, and they need him. He may not be the vocal leader, but he is the leader by example, and that example is scoring points. And he just didn't do it. Once again, he's inconsistent, and they need him, and they didn't have him tonight.
Yeah, and he even didn't really look for after he got it wasn't going well for him. Didn't really press the issue too much more. That's what you see some guys around the league, and maybe I'm just thinking the guy that pops in my head is like the Tavernary kid at BYU. Mm-hmm. He might be having a bad game now and then, but he doesn't back off. He doesn't get bashful, and he usually shoots himself out of it. All of a sudden, he's not having a very good game, but then he hits two or three in a row, and he's just a guy that keeps after it. And you almost need a guy like that. At first, some people say, well, he's not making them, don't shoot them. But somebody's got to take over. Mm-hmm. And with this team, this guy has to play. He has to shoot. He has to shoot the ball.
He has to play hard. He has to play tough. Right. He has to convert. What we saw, the disturbing thing tonight was they cut it to two. Durka comes down, hits the three. UNLV trails by five. You remember the next possession?
Wink dribbles it off his chest.
Wink,
out of bounds.
Power drive through the left lane and dribbles it off his chest. Yeah. Out of bounds. Utah ball, two more points, free throws, Durka, game over.
Yeah, two trips down the court, and it was as hard
killed
as they...
Killed that comeback, yeah.
I don't know if it was hard as they played to get back. Yeah, they had to play hard, but as long as it took to get back into it, like I said, it's just
lots
over
of
like
breaks
that.
Going their way on the defensive end.
Right.
And
even a couple of whistles were going. Mm-hmm. Remember the crowd for that one sequence when Oscar, he was, like I said, I think at the
he
time...
He took the charge after the technical,
And I think both times that he should have got the call, but he really embellished them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then... Here, unlike in other places, they show every replay.
Yeah.
I was going wild, man. And
they play devil's advocate.
Yeah. I would have said if Oscar Belfield would have been up against Sean Penn for the Oscar the other night, Oscar would have got it. He did an outstanding
Milk was
tonight.
Pretty good, though. I'm not going
to lie. Did you see what happened when Kruger was being interviewed after the game? Did you guys catch that?
Oh, when that old man came running through there, and he just gets in his face.
Said the refs tried to help you guys.
I know it. It's just like sometimes...
you win. Their team won by 10.
Yeah,
and yet he comes through.
Can't stop it.
Sour.
I know it. And
had some help, coach. What in the 10-point loss?
Yeah,
I know. I can never imagine myself on my worst day. Even if I was thinking that, saying it to the coaches, he was standing there. Yeah, after a 10-point win, no less. The one thing that never ceases to amaze me is the audacity of some people. And that guy had it.
That guy had it by the boatload.
Yeah. It was shocking. Yeah, he just started yelling.
Shocking.
Shocking. Yeah. He just started yelling at him. Yeah, Russ tried to help you out. By the way, they're staying downstairs. You know that? I saw those three guys in the lobby today. So, yeah. They're wearing dark glasses on the way over there. But the sun was
they
out.
They had the fake mustaches. All right, guys, before we get before we wrap this up, anything final you want to get off your chest?
No, this game kind of went, I thought it would be a game that at least the history of this team this year is kind of rise to the occasion to a game like this. And for a while it was close, and at the end it was close, and in between it wasn't very close. So, but it doesn't really surprise me losing to Utah. Just Utah team's playing well. They haven't lost since the Rebels beat them. So they won 7 or 8 in a row now, so... So this isn't the end of the world. It's not the worst thing that could happen. Loss against somebody like Air Force could be the worst thing that could happen.
But a missed opportunity.
And you look at like you just talked about, they could have put up solid in the tournament. They maybe only had to win one game at home instead of two or three. A week from Wednesday. So.
Glad there's a week off for the next game.
For them and for us.
I'm talking about us.
Everybody should be glad.
Yes.
Well, you got to speak for yourselves. Me and Lon Kruger are going to be at the Speedway on Saturday.
So.
He's gonna,
but I don't think he's going to stay for all 8 hours, and I think they'll get him in. They'll probably have a police escort for him to get in and out of the track, unlike us or me.
You have fun out there, Ronnie.
Oh, thank you. I will. You guys have fun in your days off. You certainly have earned a few.
Well, for Ron Kantowski, Rob Misch, I'm Ryan Green. We will talk to you next Wednesday back in Las Vegas after senior night. Take care.